of Scotland, to the spiritual splendor that is Augusta. Grab a seat, grab a glass, and punch your ticket to the PAR train.
All right, and we are back with another special PAR train here. So we've got Kevin Chappell hopping on the PAR train for the first time. What's up, Chap?
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
We're good. We're good.
Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, enjoy the off season. Happy to be on your show.
Yeah, you're home in Arizona, right?
Correct.
Awesome. Well, Matt, why don't you give the folks a quick backstory for people that don't know Chap and a quick bio before we jump in here?
Yeah, Chap, we're just going to kind of run through you a little bit here. Obviously, you grew up in Fresno. You're a Cali kid. You love UCLA. You played at UCLA. Bear down. You're currently the 32nd ranked player in the world. That's 1,161 spots ahead of the Tiger Woods. You won your first PGA Tour event at the Valero this past season. Not only did you win this year, you played in the President's Cup, and you've been on tour for many years now. So that's kind of the quick there.
You guys are pretty good hype men. I should bring you with me.
Well, you know, anytime you're ranked over 1,000 spots ahead of the greatest player arguably that's ever lived, that's all you really need, right?
That should be, if I wasn't married, that would be my pickup line. You know, I'm ranked 1,000 spots ahead of Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. I
imagine
like that.
The looks you get in the bar.
So, Chap, just like, you know, 40-yard pitch on the range, let me warm you up a bit. We got a fun question to start it off. So, what is worse? Okay, I got two scenarios for you. Getting a phone call that your kids got arrested for shoplifting in China, or your kids going to USC?
Gonna go with your kids going to USC. From the sounds of it, it costs a lot less to get a kid out of China than it does to send your kid to school in Compton. So,
yeah, right.
I'm going to go to school in SC.
All right, that's fair. And plus, you know, single occurrence versus a 4-year thing that could ruin their lives. So.
Well said.
Yeah.
All right. Chap, we're going to kind of get into a little President's Cup here, kind of pick your brain on a couple things and your experience. So this is kind of a first word question. First word that comes to mind on some specific teammates on the President's Cup. All right. So first word, let's start here. First word that comes to mind, we think of DJ.
Athlete.
First word that comes to mind, Phil Mickelson.
Wow. I'm going wow.
Okay.
Love it. First, let's go first word, Charlie Hoffman.
Partner.
I knew it. Love that.
All right. First word, Kisner.
Entertainment.
There we go. Just a few more. First word, Justin Thomas.
Trophies.
All right. Let's think about the captains here. First word, Steve Stricker.
Captain.
Okay. This next one's going to be tougher.
First word, Jim Furyk.
Captain.
All right, first word, Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods. Oh, wow. How about good sport? I know it's not one word, but he took that's a lot of heat in the President's Cup and took it all in stride. So
that's pretty cool. And for your last first word, another player, Jordan Spieth.
Mature.
Okay. Wow.
Kind of moving on here, Chap, how do you compare your kind of some of your top 2017 moments, your big win this year in Texas versus the President's Cup, kind of those experiences? How would you compare and talk about those?
Obviously, my win in Texas was great to get that monkey off my back. But, you know, because I did that, that kind of set me up to make the President's Cup team. And, you know, golf's such an individual sport, and 99% of our golf that we play is – as a professional, as an individual. And so, you know, that was a big stepping stone for me in my career. But when I look back on my career, I think that the President's Cup will be kind of the turning point in my career that kind of set off some momentum forward, kind of a jumping off point, not necessarily the win in San Antonio.
Yeah, no, that's good. And you know, and you played well. And I think that kind of jumps into how much does your President's Cup experience motivate you kind of going forward, especially next year to make the Ryder Cup in Paris?
Yeah, I mean, you asked me about Jim Furyk, and you know, that's why I answered that with captain. He is the captain of that team. When we go to Paris next year, and you know, everyone said the President's Cup's great, and the Ryder Cup is that much bigger. and you know, to play in one in Europe, in France, with you know, the crazy soccer fans and crazy European golf fans, it will be quite the experience. So I plan on not missing that one.
Absolutely.
Love it. So, Chab, I'm going to take you to 18 on Sunday at the President's Cup. I'm sitting at home watching like everyone else, and I had a nice cold Budweiser with me, and I was listening. They had the mics by your caddy, Joe, and he says to you, aim at the American flag, right of the flag, slight draw. And I don't know about you, but I visualize like a fucking American eagle flying down your shoulder as you flag hunted on that moment on Sunday. Now, I know you didn't get the result that you wanted on that shot, but talk me through that moment to be in the President's Cup, able to clinch it, when your caddy actually says, aim at the American flag. I just couldn't handle it.
Well, if I would have thought of it the way you did, I probably couldn't have handled it either.
Yeah, Evan does that a little bit.
I get excited. What can I say?
I'm glad it was like a typical conversation between Joe and I. He talks and I don't listen. you know, to be in that situation, to have a chance to clinch the point was something I wanted and I asked for, just because of the way things ended on Saturday night. I felt like there was some unfinished business. You know, unfortunately, only got a half, and Leash played nicely that day. We both played nicely. Each gave away too many holes to say we deserve to win, the both of us. But you know, a draw is great in that situation, and it got the team a half point closer to winning. But you know, that scenery there on the 18th hole, unique to finish a round of golf on a par three. But you know, that backdrop you're aiming at, a building in the New York skyline or an American flag, and you know, it's very unique. And you know, I thought it was a fantastic finishing hole.
For sure. And I remember watching the press conference after, and I know the media talked a lot about this, so I'm going to ask the question in a way that none of them did. I felt this fun tension every time DJ answered a question, and I was wondering, over under 6.5 beers for DJ before that presser, because keep me honest here, I don't think there was that much time from when the event ended to that press conference. Like, I'm fascinated by how he got to the state that he was in.
Well, there was about 2 hours from...
Oh, wow, there was. Okay.
From when DJ finished to the presser, because yeah, we went second. And, I'd say DJ got there quickly.
Okay.
I'm not one to talk because I finished first, and let's say I wasn't drinking water. Right. Watching golf there. End of the day, so you know, that's all a bit gray for me as well, but I have heard DJ was excited to be in that press conference.
How about the Boog calling you out in the presser, though? I mean, if I had to take you or Berger this year, I would say I'd take you because of the fire that he lit under you for not getting that clinching point. I like that motivation.
That's a, you know, Boog Boog got the job done, and I can't fault him for that. And I like the subtle jab he threw. definitely will motivate me, and you know, might not play in his favor moving forward if he and I come down the stretch together.
I like that. So my last fun question with the President's Cup, then I'll ask you a serious one. Siwoo shaking that ass. Can you tell me a bit about how this came about? I mean, a fascinating moment. It's one of those songs you can't get out of your head, you know?
It is a song you can't get out of your head. The Fanatics, I don't know how much they showed on television or how much you could hear, but they had some pretty clever songs for the international players, and that was one of the songs that they were singing. And, you know, I didn't get to play Thursday, and so I was on the tee box for everyone teeing off and getting to experience that atmosphere with three presidents on the tee, or former presidents on the tee. And then the Fanatics singing songs, and what an experience, and hats off to the Fanatics for some of their creativity with some of those songs.
For sure. I'm surprised that's not climbing up the iTunes charts, but I digress. So help me understand what the captains are doing, right? Like, obviously I know the big part of it is pairings, right? But at some point, you know, they're talking to you and they're figuring out, like, who do you really want to play with? It's also on the older guys. Like Phil, when I know, went up to Kiz and was like, I'd love to play with you, and captains were all aligned on that. Like, I know that Furyk now is, you know, going to be the captain for not 2 years leading up. Same with Stricker. Like, do you have, can you help us understand what they're doing that really make an impact of the end result? Or is it pretty much just making you guys feel comfortable to play your best?
I'd say a little bit of both. I think that was probably the biggest shocker to me, was how much they do and how much time is put into that side of it. And, you know, you have your traditional, I guess, what have now become traditional teams that are successful, you know, your Spieth and Reed, your Cooch and DJ. I think now you'll see Ricky and JT play together in those things, or in these events a lot. But so you have those that you kind of know are set, just because of the success they've had in the past. And then, you know, Azinger kind of brought forth in these team events, the pods, we called ours fire teams. And, you know, we had those. They wanted us to be comfortable with everyone. I think that's what you saw in our team, is that we all got along so well and really are friends and you know, really enjoy playing with one another. And so it didn't matter who you got paired with, you were going to adapt and go out and play. And so they, for the most part, they kept us in our pods, but on Tuesday night, they told us they were going to switch it up a little bit. And then that's what they changed. Kids and I were originally going to play together. Charlie and Phil were going to play together, because we were all in different pods. And then they switched it up, and obviously you got the Phil Kids pairing and me and Charlie pairing.
Yeah, because I know this didn't get a lot of play, so, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there. But I saw Phil and Strick tickle each other on their way out of the press conference, so I assume that was happening all week.
I don't know about the tickling or what went on behind closed doors besides what happened in my room, but
it's team camaraderie, right?
Definitely a laid back atmosphere and very happy go lucky.
That's good. And you know, Chap, as we're kind of moving in here, like we talked about captains there, and you know, and Tiger obviously, you know, being a presence there with you guys and assistant captain. So, you know, we kind of, you know, kind of want to ask you a few things about Tiger. Tiger really seems to make the effort to spend time with a lot of the younger players on tour, kind of the new generation of stars, including yourself. I guess, you know, not to spend too long on it, but what have you learned from Tiger just being around him, from, you know, personally or golf and those things?
So Tiger's always been great to me. I don't know if it's our connection with Nike or what, but, you know, he's always been very open and very conversive with me. My first experience with him was actually at Liberty National in 2011. It was my second year on tour. We get paired together, second to last group, the final day when he was battling through that injury. And just to hear, like, that he's a real guy and loves to banter, loves to talk shit you know, and just be one of the guys, you know, it's actually very comforting and shows you that he, despite his accomplishments and where he is in the spectrum of athletes in the world or as a celebrity in the world, he just really wants to be a normal guy. And, you know, I think he projects that in those team atmospheres. It's a comfortable setting where, you know, it's the 16 of us and our wives or significant others. And so it's comfortable. And, you know, you really got to see that. I got a glimpse of it at Liberty National 11, and you really got to see it, you know, at the President's Cup. And even when I did a clinic with him a week later, you know, I got to spend some time with him at Monterey Peninsula and, you know, even saw more of it, just cause it was just, he and I, it was a little more intimate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that clinic had to be a great, fun experience. I mean, kind of anything you could maybe share a little bit more about that experience, kind of being with him, kind of working the crowd, being on the range.
Yeah, tell us about the track. Tell him about Tiger's track and that penetrating flight and the power. I want to hear all the details.
All right, so let me start with how that came about. So that came about maybe the week before the President's Cup. Some of his people that run that his event there, which is phenomenal, by the way, for his foundation. But they called and said, you know, Tiger's not hitting balls yet. We know you're from Northern California. We'd love to have you do the clinic with him. You know, you're going to hit shots. Tiger's just going to kind of MC, real fun, laid back, quick trip. You know, we'll fly you in and out. Think it'd be great for you. And so, you know, my that came across my, you know, came to me, and I was like, yeah, happy to do it. You know, Monterey's is close to where I grew up, and you know, I figured I would know a few people there. And you know, anytime Tiger's asking you to do something, you need to look hard at it and
right.
probably answer yes. But so comes about, I get there. I guess that was on a Monday. I was on a Tuesday. I got there Monday night. Watched Monday Night Football. Had a glass of wine or two. Didn't see Tiger, but saw, you know, a few people in his event. Kind of small talk. Wake up the next day and go have breakfast with Tiger. And so we're just small chatting, catching up for the week. Like, how you feeling? He's like, I'm feeling good. And sure. I was like, all right, so what are we going to do here in this clinic? Like, I'm going to hit some and you're just going to MC. And he's like, no, I'm going to hit some too. And let me remind you, I was with him 7 days earlier, 8 days earlier. And he was telling us he couldn't hit it 60 yards.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, President's Cup. So I was like, oh, okay. You know, so.
Sounds good, like, man.
Awesome. You're feeling good, huh? And he's like, yeah. So we go out there and they introduce us. And fortunately, the MC was, his name's Danny Conway, who introduced us. And he's on Tiger's board of the foundation. But Danny is a Bruin. And I lived across the hall from his brother, Topher. In school, so he knows me, and so he hyped me up and beat Tiger down a little bit. So
that's awesome.
that was quite humorous. But so we start hitting shots, and you could hear the strike, and it was nice. You know, I was like, oh. So thinking to myself the whole time, you know, you're only like 6 days into hitting balls. It sounds like this, huh? And so he starts talking about hitting shots, and this is what I do to shape it. This is what I do to hit it high, hit it low. So he starts hitting one. So he hits one high. I hit one, it goes a little higher. And he's like, oh. And so then he hits one low, and I hit one equally as low. And so he's like, oh, one of these, it's going to be one of these clinics, I see. So then the wind's blowing like 20 off the right. So then he hits a cut shot that flies dead straight, but it was pretty impressive because the wind's blowing so hard off the right.
Right.
So I hit one, and it falls a little left. And he's like, not bad. You know, he kind of like him haws at it. So then he's like, all right, can you hit this one? And he aims 60 yards right. And he's like, you have to start it over there at that tree, and it has to land right of that flag. And it was like this big 60-yard hook. And I'm like, sure, let's try it. So he hits it, and he hits it to like 3 feet.
Are you serious?
Okay. Yeah, I'm like, okay. That's when I really started questioning how good he is, and or maybe he's been practicing a little longer than what we've been told.
And he's just talking shit to you, right?
Pretty much. It's very laid back, and he kind of, you know, he gives it his little sarcastic laugh, like, gotcha. And sure enough, I didn't execute the shot, and that was kind of enough said. And then we started hitting four irons, and it was, you know, same wind, and it's hard to tell how far they're going or relative to each other, but, I mean, his ball sounded great. He was changing heights and changing spins wonderfully, and but then he did before we started the clinic say he couldn't hit any drivers. We got to hitting drivers, and he basically just started answering questions and told me to hit a few drivers, and that was the end of it. But
that's awesome.
To see it progress away, you know, I'm as big a fan of the game as anyone, and you know, I look forward to obviously getting to compete against him in the Bahamas next week, but also getting to see how he's playing and where his game is.
That's awesome. So let me ask you this, because Tiger is, everybody talks about Tiger, right? But he's arguably the greatest player of all time. He went through a period where, you know, everyone talked about his chipping yips and how he's fallen to over 1,000 in the world. So I'm curious, from your standpoint, do you work hard? Like, what drives you? Do you work hard to be great, or do you work hard a little bit because you're afraid to lose it?
That's a good question. You know, when I turned professional, I kind of said I was going to get all I had for till I was 40 years old. And so that was 19 years from when I turned pro, and I was going to work as hard as I could. And if I could look myself in the mirror at 40 years old, I would, I probably wouldn't have to play golf anymore if I didn't want to. I still could, but I wouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's kind of what drives me. Not necessarily, you know, those scenarios you painted, but so I'm self-driven. that's my goal. I'm 31 years old now, and so I got 9 years left to give it all I have, and we'll see when I have that conversation with myself when I'm 40 years old if I want to keep playing, or if I want to play less of a schedule, or if I want to coach baseball, or, you know, whatever it is I want to do. But, you know, that's kind of how I've been motivated, self-motivated, and so I break it down to basically I got to get better every day. And so whether right. that's you know, I learned to hit a new shot today, or I can justify getting better by, you know, I drank six beers tonight instead of drinking eight, you know, it's all about how you twist it.
For sure. And you're actually one of the only people I've heard that says that besides Rory actually talks about that a bit, where he says he sees players playing less and leaving the game a little bit younger. So that's interesting that you say that too.
Listen, our generation, I'm going to include myself in some of these young guys, but let's just say under 35, 35 and under have played for more money than anyone has ever played for.
Yep.
You know, throughout their careers. And
thanks, you know, to Tiger, you know, in a lot of ways.
It is. Thank you to Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. And, you know, that generation has brought in, you know, golf to the forefront and the spotlight, and brought sponsors to the game that we never had. But guys don't necessarily need to grind it out anymore.
Right.
You know, when you get into your mid-40s. And, you know, I think that's when you see why guys really play the game. And,
sure,
you know, at times, you know, golf is, I really enjoy it, but golf is my job, and everyone has bad days at work. So, you know, it's all about, you know, managing those and trying to limit them.
So my final Tiger question for you, his arms in person, intimidating or inspiring?
I guess I look at him as like, what's the point?
Yeah.
And, dude, I know he's not going to 330 because of his biceps, let me tell you. Right, but the guy is in phenomenal shape. He is fit to the eye, and
he's always wanted to be an athlete, you know, so it's kind of part of his DNA.
I think he accomplished that. I mean, his waist must be a 28.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about, we're always interested, I think every golf fan is interested in life on tour, right? It's a crazy thing. You guys are traveling all over the place. I was curious, considering your life on tour now since 08, 09, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself back when you turned pro?
Honestly, it'd be like, be patient. I've been fortunate that I've never taken a step backwards in my career. You know, I went from having no status to Monday qualifying to status on the web.com to having a PGA Tour card to keeping a PGA Tour card to each year I finished, you know, ahead of the previous year in the FedEx Cup, you know, to getting in the top 50 in the world to winning a golf tournament, to playing President's Cups, whatever it is. And I've done that in a very like sequential order, and not as fast as I thought it would happen, but it's all kind of happened, and I've been very fortunate to have all that stuff happen to me. But, you know, it's so cliche to say stay patient, but, you know, since I did stay the course and stay true to what I believed in and what I wanted to work on, I've been able to accomplish those things.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you're talking about. And, you know, Matt Kuchar talks a lot about natural progression, kind of, you know, you've really improved over your career, you know, making more cuts, some really high top finishes kind of early on. You were making the tour, high major finishes. Then, you know, you finally got your win in your President's Cup. I guess, can maybe kind of talk about that journey a little bit. Is it your belief that gets stronger? You know, is it managing that second round game when it's not quite there to still make the cut? Cause you're making more cuts, obviously to go along with all your success. And then I guess talk about what was going through your mind, you know, with your win on that Sunday when you shot 68 against Brooks Koepka, the Valero.
So the natural progression of the game is, I think, one we all battle, and we all kind of go through it at our own pace and our own rate, right? You see these guys that the Jordan Spieths and Justin Thomas's that have so much success so early on.
Right.
You know, I look at a guy like Matt Kuchar. He's a journeyman. He's been up and down once from web.com to the PGA Tour, back to web.com, back to the PGA Tour. And but he's, you know, he's a perennial top 20 player in the world now, and he's true to himself. He's never going to do something that or try to do something he can't do. Everything about him is unorthodox, but he will flat out go out and compete and try and beat your ass. And
yeah,
you know, I think that's something I can learn and have learned from, is that it doesn't matter what it looks like or even what it feels like. It's at the end of the day, it's about shooting a low score. And you know, so when on a Friday afternoon, when you're going to finish on the front nine of a golf tournament and feel like you're not even a part of it, but you birdie the last two, the last three to make the cut by one, and you've given yourself another chance and
sure
to move up the leaderboard on the weekend. And you know, that's important to have tournaments that you salvage when you don't have it. And I think that's one thing I've learned, is that you know, limit mistakes. As long as I've learned I'm talented enough that if I can stay present, stay in a golf tournament, stay in a round, that I'm going to have my run. And, you know, it's a matter of like waiting out that run and knowing it's going to come. And you'll have that magical hour, whether that's every day or magical round in a tournament, that kind of keeps you in it.
Yeah. And coming down the stretch there on Sunday at the Valero, I mean, you've won so many tournaments in your career as a junior, as an amateur, and things like that. Were you kind of, you know, not, and you've been in these positions before, but what, you know, how were you channeling some of your kind of your past successes and talent, and just kind of letting it happen? I think that's just interesting for you to talk about for some of our listeners.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I didn't answer that part of the last question, but
that's okay.
So that, I mean, you hear this all the time when people have a breakthrough, that, you know, they were so calm and they were so, everything was so clear, and it really was that day. I kind of felt like I was in control the whole day, and it was mine to win. I would make bogey on 15, and to fall back into a one shot lead. And I told my caddy, I said, "We're the only, I think I finished at 13 under. I said, we're the only one that can finish at 13 under. Or maybe it was 12. We're the only ones that can finish at 12, because they were one shot back. Tony Finau and Brooks were both one shot back playing 18. And at the time when I was on 16T, I said, we're the only ones that can finish at 12 under. The whole, no one was going to get there that day in two. Even those two guys, it would be a struggle. And the pin was in the back of the green, so likely wasn't going to give up an eagle. So with them only having one hole to play, we're the only ones that can get to 12 under. And Joe's like, yeah. I was like, all right. So if we get three chances, we can get three looks at it coming in, you know, odds are I'm going to make one of the three. So that immediately set a goal. And, we tried to go accomplish that goal, right? To just get three looks and see what happens. So hit a great shot into 16. I actually thought it was closer to the hole than it was. It was like right on line. And one of those shots that the closer you got to the green, the closer the ball got away from the hole. You know?
Yeah.
So you're like, damn it. I got really do have a 20 footer, but it looked like it was 2 feet. So, you know, just miss a 20 footer. And then 17's a unique hole there. Drivable hole, real goofy green, you know, three tiers, and you got to get it on the right spot. And I hit it, you know, in the right fringe, but really didn't have a play to hit it close. And two, I could have chipped it. It was off a tight lie, basically chipping it off the green and, you know, downwind. And if you miss hit it, you can miss the green. And so basically Joe, my caddy Joe and I, we finally made a good decision and said, well, why don't we stick to the plan and just try and get a look? So I hit a putt and just didn't hit it hard enough. So the slope took it really far left, and I had a 15 footer, you know, another good look, and, you know, just missed that one. And, you know, 18, I had been in that situation there before,
right.
I guess it was a 10. And when Brendan Steele won, and, so it's a tee shot I'd hit before under the same circumstances, something I was comfortable with, knew I wasn't going to get there. So I didn't have to smash it. So I just kind of hit something out of the heel, a little heel cut out there in the fairway, laid it up, further that Saturday than I did further than I did on Saturday. Saturday I laid up almost in the hazard, and so we made sure to hit it further down there, and it just had a good number. And when I hit the wedge shot, it looked a little long to me, and then the crowd reacted a little goofy. And then, you know, now that I've seen the highlights, the ball got into the back fringe and spun, and you know, was a good look, and one that it's a putt that often gets often made on Sunday there. Charlie Hoffman made it the year before to win. So
I
kind of knew the read, and I just told myself to hit as good a putt as I could and see what happens. And, you know, I did, and it was online the whole way. And then you got to see kind of a raw reaction to a bunch of close calls.
For sure.
Yeah, no, that's a good – thanks for kind of running through that. It's pretty cool. It was a great moment to watch. And obviously, like you said, it's monkey off the back, and, you know, you're going to keep it going.
Now he's an American hero. I mean, the guy the guy's really moving up there. So let me ask you, I know it's all about routine, right? So can you walk us through your current routine, your practice routine, maybe a drill or a swing thought or something in your game, whether it's mental or whatever, that you think has changed your game or elevated it / you spend the most time on that some hackers out there can benefit from?
It's a good question. But for me, currently, as I'm doing this podcast, you know, the focus is on is getting the short game better.
Are you putting right now?
Distance wedges, chipping and putting. I'm not. I probably should, though.
Yeah, you should. Although then you couldn't drink, so we urge you to get a beer. I don't know if you end up getting one.
No beers yet. It's only 2:30 on a Tuesday holiday.
I'm too deep. I'm too deep, so it's cool. Sorry,
relax,
go ahead.
Relax, Ev.
You might have a problem. I have a focus. I have a focus for the off season, and I found a lot of distance last year off the tee, and when I broke down my year statistically, I didn't take advantage of that. Being closer to the hole didn't necessarily equate to making more birdies, and there was two reasons for that. I didn't wedge it as well as I can or well as I have in the past, and I didn't when I did wedge it well, I didn't convert putting. So just really focused on getting the ball in the hole. Purchased a TrackMan, which is something I kind of swore I would never have, but it's not for the sake of
It's good.
It's not for the sake of the numbers with the golf swing. It's more of the tracking the golf ball and how far it's going. So I've created some of my own, I guess let's call them tests, or on TrackMan they're called combines, to challenge my wedge game and my iron play. And then, my goal for the year putting it is to create a plan and stick with it for the 25 tournaments I play. So never change putters, never, change the way I'm practicing, kind of stick to the process and see if at the end of the year that the results show up totaling everything up, if you see the improvement. I think one thing I can do, especially with putting, is, you have a bad day, you blow it up and you try something new. And, for someone that historically hasn't putted it as good as, others, I need to try something different, and that's something I believe in and I'm committed to. So
that's good. And Chap, you kind of have a mixed set of clubs with your equipment, and how often are you, which is great, I think more players are kind of doing that these days, I think, because you're trying to cater to your style for your wedge game and your long irons and things like that. How often are you testing clubs maybe a little bit throughout the season, or what's it been like for you?
Need to answer that question honestly, because I don't even really know what I'm playing at the moment. I just had to think to put some thought into that. But, I play TaylorMade Woods and a Titleist golf ball and a Scotty Cameron putter, and that's what I'm committed to, and I will play those for sure this year. As far as irons and wedges, I'm still looking to find something to replace the Nike stuff I played, and have played some other stuff in competition last year and as of late. And, still not sold on anything, but have worked with a few manufacturers and have really tried to enjoy the experience as much as I can.
Absolutely.
It's unique in our business that you're a free agent and you get to test things. It's fun, but it's also difficult because you hit a bad shot and
it can be overwhelming.
The golf club. Yeah, you kind of
can be overwhelming too, right? All the options.
So my garage, my wife's not too happy with my garage right now with the equipment. I'm gonna play what's best for me, and right now that's still playing Nike irons, and the TaylorMade Woods and Scotty Cameron putter and a Talus ball. So,
cool. Speaking of your garage, where the hell do you put all those balls that you get rid of after you make a birdie?
You know, that question needs to be asked to Joe because
he's selling them on eBay.
They must fund his golfing addiction.
Oh, sure.
I don't know where they.
You know, and that's okay. Well,
Joe's got a solid swing. I saw it at Sawgrass.
Joe does have a solid swing. He played in Canada for a few years, and we played golf recently at Whisper Rock here in Arizona, and played with two other pros, and Joe was the low man in the group, I will say.
Mm, wow. All right, let me ask you this. I know a lot of people ask, like, what's the craziest story you've heard on tour? So let me rephrase that in a more fun way, because that's what we do here. You are 41 years old with your boys on tour. I'm sure you got a group of guys that you like to have a few beers with after a round, maybe on a Sunday night. If you're staying over.
I know this podcast has been old, but or has been long, but did I just age 10 years in the podcast?
You have. So this is some inception shit. We're going in the future. Okay. You're 41 years old. You've been retired 1 year. Okay. We're following your plan of ending your play at 40, and the other guys did as well. So you've got your buddies on tour. You're at a nice fire pit. You're all retired. You got a nice stogie, maybe some scotch, who knows? And you're talking about how dumb you used to be. What's probably the story that you guys are talking about? You don't need to throw out names, but what is that story around the fire?
Wow.
You got anything for us? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
How dumb I used to be. I mean, the web.com tour was way more fun than the PGA tour.
Yep.
I met my wife shortly after securing my PGA tour card on the web.com tour. So, you know, I had 9 months of fun traveling with a buddy and doing some strange things. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind that's pretty clean and I wouldn't be embarrassed if my kids ever heard this was We decided to drive from Columbus, Ohio to Omaha, Nebraska. It was me, my caddy, who was a college roommate of mine at UCLA, Brandon Christensen, Zach Williamson, he caddies for Bud Cauley now. At the time, he was working for Jonas Blixt, and Brandon DeStefano, who at the time was working for Colt Knost and last worked for Andres Gonzalez. And we literally gambled on anything and everything. And so we're driving, we're somewhere in the middle of the U.S., and we decide that we're going to see who can stand the longest with the heater on, or basically who would tap out first. So we turn the heater on as hot as it could go, and we're just driving in the heat. And so, you know, quickly clothes start coming off. And so pretty soon there's four of us in our boxers in this, you know, Jeep SUV driving through the middle of America. Like, you know, guys that aren't driving are drinking beers, and, you know, it's warm beer by now. And, you know, but someone, you know, it's probably a $20 bet. Someone, you know, had to pay everyone $20. And so just stupid things like that. Or I think we stopped in at the Isle Capri, which is a casino in that's right near where the John Deere's played. And pretty sure I got stopped from gambling that night.
Sure.
Maybe been overshot, as one does. And
took a break.
You know, yeah, just I needed a timeout. But yeah, so that trip itself probably ended at a strip club somewhere along the way. And you know, that type of stuff would definitely be up there. There's a few stories that I probably shouldn't tell and won't, that's one that is fairly clean and I'm not too embarrassed by.
Yeah, we can talk about those off air. That's no problem. Yeah, I've actually played that same game. I'm a Midwest guy from St. Louis. So summer and the humidity, put those bun warmers on, high heat. It's tough to keep those windows up, I tell you what.
I'm just glad we never got pulled over. That would have looked weird.
Yeah.
Right. Some explaining to do. Chap, I mean, now that you've kind of you've really created some great success and fame for yourself, you know, we're telling funny stories here, but like, let's be honest, you and a lot of the guys, you're covered day in and day out by the media, and media's changed with social media. So, you know, what comes to mind when, you know, stories are getting written about you or some of the other guys, what does the media really get wrong when they're covering you guys? Or, you know, we can bet that a lot of the media aren't maybe the best golfers, but what are some of the things that just kind of turn you off?
Or what should they cover more of?
Yeah.
So just with social media, I think, people's personalities are able to be shown more.
Sure.
Because you get to control what people see. I think the problem with it is that you're kind of at the mercy of others' interpretations mm-hmm. of what you're posting, what you're saying on social media. And so, things like sarcasm get lost through social media and everything gets taken so literal, which,
right.
I'm sarcastic. So that's frustrating for me. As far as the golf goes, I think a lot of writers or talking heads tend to forget what it's like to hit shots and what it's like to grind out a score. And that golf is a difficult game. And I'll be the first to admit that, it's trying. And some days when it's good, it seems really easy. And when it's hard, you're questioning whether you'll ever find it again. So I think people lose sight of that, that even as professionals, we kind of have those ups and downs and we are human beings and have raw emotional feelings.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Like I said, the personalities do come through a little bit on social media when you use it in the right way. I think it's cool for the fans.
What would Joe do Wednesday? We love it. That's why you're on the show. Yeah. We love your personality.
That's pretty good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
great.
I got a question for you later about those pro-ams, but I'll let Serm ask his next one.
Yeah, Jeb, one thing I wanted to ask you, I played in college at Missouri State. I didn't play professionally. If you could kind of sum up one or two key differences between a top collegiate player, which you were at the absolute top, in the top amateur ranks, versus a tour player that cracks the 125, and you know about cracking the 125 on the number. I know so many good players, that never did anything. And what is that about?
I think it comes to, so one thing, my biggest, the hardest thing I had to go through was managing time. And,
sure.
When you're in college or even when you're in college at Missouri State, someone accounted for probably 18 hours of your day,
right.
Whether it was class, practice, workouts, study hall, whatever it was, you had a lot of your time was accounted for. And when you turn professional or when you're not, part of a team anymore, all of a sudden you have 24 hours and you need to get everything done and no one's doing it for you. You got to do it yourself.
Yep.
So, I'm from major structure to, oh man, I got all the time in the world. And all of a sudden I feel like I can get nothing done. And, so that was my first growing pain was like, all right, I need to do all these things. I need to be in the gym. I need to practice. I need to make sure I'm eating well. I need to be social.
You got to have a balance too, like you said, social, right. Because you'll grind yourself out.
Correct. And for me, that's important. But so that was my first thing I went through. But the biggest difference, I'd say, golf-wise, is just the discipline. There's nothing that kills rounds of golf or tournaments like three putts, penalty shots, bogeys inside 150 yards, and sixes on par fives. And, if you were to look at a PGA Tour player, a successful PGA Tour player, they're doing that a lot less than a college player. Let's just call those unforced errors. And if you can keep just that category itself off of a the scorecard for 72 holes, you're probably going to be in contention, no matter what you do on the other holes. And, I think that's that'd be the biggest difference.
Yeah. You got to take advantage of those par fives. I mean, it's simple, but it's so true.
I mean, Serm and I's mutual best friend used to beat Scott Langley in junior golf in Missouri all the time. The guy's selling insurance. Scott's, playing professional golf. Got to throw his name out there, That's why he's asking for our boy Rye.
Right.
Thanks, Chip.
The old name drop, huh?
Yeah. So I got a real talk for a second, okay? This question I've been wondering for a long time. So I'm going to take you through another scenario. I'm a big scenario guy. Let's say... I know you like to play that draw. So let's say you get a little bit over the top, you snap hook the shit out of it. Well, let's say you look down at the ground. This is the most common move of a pro, right? You look down at the ground, you look at the club face, you're a little confused. Like, is that an act? Or you like actually freaking out a little bit inside like the rest of us? Like, how the hell did that shot just happen? Or is something actually happening from the ground to the club face that just caused a 40-yard hook?
Okay, so the ground look is like, oh, I'm looking at the divot. What did the divot look like?
Well, okay.
Always tells the story.
But I think I mentioned TrackMan earlier. I think that's disproved that, but that's another story. But anyway, so people look at the divot, and then they look at the face, like, was there something on the face or something in between the ball and the face?
Okay.
But I'd say mostly it's an act. You're just you're being dramatic. Remember, we are entertainers, man.
I know. I love it. I love hearing that. So speaking of entertainment, that is a perfect segue to my final question about life on tour. Mic'd up caddies. So I used to work at the NFL. Mic'd up is a big thing. Let's say Joe knows. Like, obviously, you're not going to do it all the time because you guys are going to talk about whatever, right? And that's infringing on the fun and privacy that you're having out there. But if you know that you have one round every few tournaments or every couple months that Joe's going to be mic'd up and the TV audience can listen into your conversations, why do you think that hasn't happened yet?
I mean, what is the positive in it for the player and the caddy? That's all I want to know. I'm going to ask you a question.
Well, that's a good one. I like you. There's turning it around on me.
There's nothing to gain for the player. It would be very entertaining. I agree, but you open up a can of worms that doesn't necessarily need to be open for the player and caddy, and you kind of intrude on that relationship and the privacy that we can have at times.
Interesting. The one thing I would say to that is it's on the tour. You got to have trust in the tour of what they do with that. Like, the reason why it worked with the NFL is because everybody trusted NFL Network and films to use what painted them in a positive light, right? So that's key. But hopefully it would increase popularity of the sport, which could then reflect in higher, you know, paychecks and purses. But no, it's a fair point.
Could you be the company man?
Yeah, I'm a company guy, you know?
I would, if that's the case, that they're editing out the stuff that doesn't portray someone in a positive light, I would love to find the bloopers on the NFL, the mic'd up bloopers.
Yeah, well, that makes two of us.
Yeah, because that's a whole different deal. Champ, we just got a few more things for you. Kind of really what's most important in your golf game and your personal life. So, just real quickly, we want to talk about the majors a little bit with you and your experiences. First, can you kind of talk about 2017 Masters experience, you know, having a great weekend, having a great finish at T7, but also you had your family out there for the par three contest. Kind of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, really up to the Masters, 2017 had been a trying year professionally. I really hadn't found any form. My daughter was born in January, end of January, and I just speaking from experience, when my son was born in 15, I kind of had the child hangover for a little while, and then once the family started traveling, I tend to kind of break out of my funk a little bit, and that was about when they started traveling. So the Masters was a fun week, having them there. We stayed with the Kisners. We're real close. We have kids that are close in age, and so wine drinking at night and, you know, being parents and,
sure,
and just relax and, you know, getting to, get away from the stress of Augusta and all the, hoopla that it is. But, you know, so that was, you know, that side of it made it, enjoyable. And then to go out and play well, was great to see my game kind of come into form, to play a solid back nine on Sunday to, finish, what was it, Tiger seventh, was great and really created some momentum. And then, you know, to go out and win my next event kind of, you know, showed what that did for me mentally.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. And, you know, Chap, you've had some great finishes at the U.S. Open. You've had a T23, T10, a T3, you know, pretty impressive. What do you think it is about the U.S. Open that maybe seems to fit your eye, you know, kind of in your career as you're still early in your career, but kind of what's led to that success, some of that success?
Guy's a grinder.
Oh,
well, I know that.
So actually, it's a good question. I think it gives you a little insight into who I am as a person or how I look at things. But I've always looked at the majors as the person that fucks up less is gonna win. Mm-hmm. And sure, in those events, you're going to mess up. You're going to make bogeys. Most of the time, you're going to make a double.
Right.
And it's about doing less. And you know, so we're there when you're in trouble, about getting out of trouble, and salvaging. And you know, so often in regular PGA Tour events, when 20 under par is winning, it's, you know, you might be out of position and you got to try to score. You got to take on more risk to try to get in the golf tournament, to try and stay in the golf tournament. And, you know, so, you know, just having that attitude's given me a little bit more peace of mind, I guess, in those events, and led to some success.
No, it's pretty cool. I think you're hopefully due to win one of those, if not some of the other majors. It seems like your attitude certainly fits that pretty well. So just want to talk about the majors because that's what it's about. But you know, as we wrap up here, Chap, we just kind of want to talk about a little bit life at home, and I know we've touched on a little bit, but just a couple things we want to ask you. First thing, as someone who's I grew up playing, and I never got into fishing, but a lot of golfers, especially pros, love to go fishing. I want to ask you why, and is it because of the Zen factor, you know, of getting away and having that peace of mind? But wanted to ask you about some fishing.
So I do enjoy fishing. Something I probably talk about doing more than I actually do. I grew up practicing at a par 3 course in driving range in Fresno.
Sure.
It's called River Park. Still there.
And, old name drop
shout
there.
Out, shout out River Park.
They had some lakes on the par 3 course. And so I would go practice for a few hours and then go bass fish in these lakes. And so that's where I really enjoyed it. And I don't even know if it was fishing, you know, like I didn't study how to catch the bass. It was more of these fish were wanting to be caught. No one was fishing them. And so, I mean, even me, the amateur fisherman that I am, could catch fish there. And I, you know, that's the name of the game. It should be called catching, not fishing, because a lot of the time you go out there, you don't catch anything. So, but as a whole, I think, you know, golfers are outdoorsmen. We're outdoors a lot. And, you know, we have that in common with the, you know, the sports like hunting and fishing. I would love to fish more, love to have a better understanding of it. And so, you know, it's something I try to do. Probably get to do it once a year, but I'm definitely a novice when it comes to that.
And it's something you've been doing for a long time. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know that you're a family man. You got two kids, great wife. And I read your wife's 18 facts. It's on your website. Great website, by the way. Everybody should go check it out. KevinChappell.com. Little plug there.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We read that you're a big conspiracy theorist. I couldn't let this podcast end without hearing your go-to favorite, most passionate conspiracy theory. Do you got one on the ready for us?
One of my favorites is the Denver airport and kind of what's being hid there and what all the subplots behind the Denver airport. And I am a conspiracy theorist in the sense of I don't think we always hear the true story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to take away lives that have been lost or in some of these traditional conspiracy theories because I know that that's terrible. But I do become infatuated with trying to figure out what the truth is. And I've been known to stay up till the wee hours in the morning watching conspiracy theory videos.
I'll pay for it the next day. Chap, I just Googled Denver airport, and this is involving art.
Yep.
Man.
You got 45 minutes. Watch it. There's a good video on YouTube about it.
That's incredible. I was not expecting Denver airport hiding art, but hey, I love that.
That's just one piece of it. You know, I think, the 9/11, there's some entertaining, to say the least, theories there that you can get into. Even more recently, the Las Vegas shootings, which is awful, but, there has been some pretty out there, theories on that have, caught my eye. So, you know, I'm more into it and like trying to figure out, hey, what could this possibly have happened?
Right.
Could this be a motive more than trying to like disprove or say that people didn't lose their lives?
And again, a good little side passion. Chap, we know you're a big charity guy. Really your whole life with some of the Oncology Foundation work, but also with the Special Olympics. I didn't know if you wanted to say anything about that or kind of what's going on there.
Yeah,
or if you wanted to mention people can get involved or donate and such.
So my wife and I have a foundation. It's called Kevin Chappell's Champions for Children. We raise money for the oncology department at the Valley Children's Hospital, just outside of Fresno, California. And how that kind of came about is they approached me, wanted to know if we wanted to do something with them or if we could help out. And we were just getting ready to get married, my wife and I, and didn't have any philanthropic direction or any way we were going. And so one Christmas, instead of getting each other stuff, we went to the Toys R Us and sent a bunch of toys to the hospital. And we went through every, they call them wards there. We went through every ward and spent some time with the kids and met some families and heard some stories. And the one place that really hit home for us was the oncology department. We went through there and there was multiple, 10, 11, 12 year olds going through chemotherapy by themselves, because wow. Their parents, had 9-to-5 jobs and couldn't afford to, not go to work that day. And so you're just seeing these courageous kids, in the holiday season, go through, battle for their life. And, we've been fortunate to be healthy, but, we just wanted to do what we could. And, so that's been going on about 5 years and, we've raised, about $500,000 and the giraffe head cover on my golf bag, on my driver is we sell those on my webpage and, it's all proceeds go to the kids in the oncology department.
That's great.
As far as Special Olympics, my godmother, Michelle Carmichael, she taught special ed at Hoover High in Fresno, California for, 40 years. And she had an awesome summer program for the kids. And when I was out of school, out of elementary school, my parents didn't know what to do with me. They were both working. And so I would go to her summer program with her. And, they would call it that I would go work with her. But really, I was playing with friends. I'd be 8 years old playing with, 16-year-olds. They were my peers. I didn't see them as any different than I am. They could do things that I could do, and we would laugh at each other and play and really just enjoy the summer together. And so some of my fondest memories as a kid is, going to that summer program with my godmother, but we still try to help out where we can. You might see in the near future us turn our focus towards a little bit more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a Chicago guy, and Special Olympics started here in Chicago. And I've done some volunteering myself. Business community is very involved. So it's just really cool.
Here's the new tagline.
What they're doing at the national level.
Kevin Chappell, philanthropist, American hero, 1,000 spots higher on the world ranking than Tiger Woods. Wow.
I don't know where you get the American hero from. I don't know if I'm worthy of it.
I mean, you won your first time. You're undefeated in team play. I figured it was worthwhile.
Ev loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love Chap. It.
Two last questions before we let you go. I'm going first. Chap, give us goals for the 2018 season that you're setting for yourself.
One's a goal that I didn't accomplish last year that's a carryover, and that is the low 16-round total in the majors.
I like it.
You figure that one out.
Like that. Okay. Last question for you. A lot of podcasts out there get guests on their show that serves them. It's very self-serving. We are a podcast of the people. We're all about our guests. So I'm going to put this on you, Chap. Who you think on tour would be a fun get for our next guest on the show? We're all about people like you. We give back, have fun, talk the shit. Who you think's a good get for us for the next show?
I think you would be surprised by and how entertaining they are is Matt Kuchar. He was the most, getting to know Matt on a little bit more of a personal level at the President's Cup. He is one of the funnier human beings I've ever met, especially for going to Georgia Tech. I mean, you wouldn't expect personality there, but he's a funny dude, and he would have a lot of good stories.
We could talk a little ping pong too.
Oh,
you could talk some ping. He's a ping pong connoisseur. I think, Harold Barner would be another good get.
I like that.
A little under the radar.
That's kind of
compared to Matt Kuchar, but Harold is hilarious. He's lived and a hell of a golfer.
All right, we'll put Chap to work. A little homework assignment. Bring us Cooch. All right, we're cool. All right. All right. Well, hey, you've been with us for an hour. That's more than a time that we planned, but we really appreciate you coming on. This was awesome. I hope everyone sees how great of a guy you are and funny, great personality, and obviously giving back. So we foresee
can't thank you enough, Chap.
Bright future in 2018. Well, thanks so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me. Yep.
And just as the sun rises and sets in Scotland, so too have we come to the end of another Partrain. Be sure to follow us at the Partrain on Instagram and Twitter, and of course subscribe to us on iTunes. And may your glasses always stay full and your ball always end up in the bottom of the cup.